Whether you've merely heard of Linux or consider yourself an expert, here's your chance to learn more about it at the Southern California Linux Expo. For 2009, Scale 7X has added two new tracks for developers and beginners. We'll have over 60 speakers who will cover the latest topics in open source software, and the expo floor will have more than 80 booths featuring commercial and non-profit organizations showing their products and software. The Friday special sessions have returned with Docs, the open source conference for healthcare. Women in Open Source will reprise their conference, as will the Open Source Software and Education Conference. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 20th, 21st, and 22nd, 2009, at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles. For more information or to register for the expo, visit socallinuxexpo.org. Use promo code CAST, C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration, and we'll see you at Scale 7X.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software. Free speech. Open technology and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Happy good day.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome good once day. Again
to the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 280 this time. 280. That's a whole lot of shows right there.
Yes, and wonderful guest tonight, Andy Pitnack, prominent open office macro developer, and a wonderful author. Good day, Andrew.
His Highness, the Honorable Andy Pitnack, Esquire.
Hi, guys. I'm a long-time listener, a first-time caller, and I just wanted to ask a question. when it says insightful, which one of you is it referring to again?
He's not here.
That's Pat's part, and he's not here, yeah.
Sorry, I just heard that in the intro, and I just had to ask. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, thank you for coming on. The excitement, the wow starts now.
I'm telling you.
The wow starts now.
The wow starts now and the insightful's gone? All right. I'm ready.
So, there, you know, OpenOffice.org just released version 3, and you are a prominent macro developer. And when people say macros in an Office suite, they often think about Microsoft's Office macros and how wonderfully stable and secure that they tend to be.
Macromaniac.
So what do they mean by the Open Office macro guru? What does that title bestow upon you?
I think it just means I've been doing it a long time.
How long is a long time?
And I was taking a look at one of the free documents that I give away, and I noticed that the copyright goes all the way back to 2002, which means that I have at least had something available since, 2002. So, 2009 now, you know, so that's 6-7 years anyway. Of course, I've been using OpenOffice. Well, okay, I was using StarOffice back in the day.
Wow, StarOffice. I remember StarOffice.
Yeah,
I remember when you could install it and bring it up, and it took over your desktop, and it had its own email client in it.
Oh, way back when.
The good old days.
And they still have old residue from that in there. They use names like, hey, you get the desktop so you can then, you know, iterate through all your documents. And then people ask, why do they call it a desktop? Because that's a long story. That goes back 7-8 years. Actually, did you know that OpenOffice has actually been around longer than Microsoft Office?
Say it ain't so. You lying now.
Yeah, they released, well, it wasn't called OpenOffice at the time, obviously. It used to be called StarWriter, back in the day, as it were. But it's actually an older, more mature product than Microsoft Office. They beat Microsoft Word, I forget by how much, but yeah, they were out the door first.
So, you know, you hear about these huge applications, these lumbering giants like Office, and OpenOffice is considered to be a huge application. Is there a lot of cruft from being that mature of an application? A lot of crap that's left over that might just be not used and taking up space, or, you know, preventing stuff from running properly, or causing, you know, creep, bug creep and stuff?
Yes, but they do purposely remove certain sections out of the code after they determine that it isn't used. They've made a large push within the last year or so to try to remove unused code, if you take a look, you'll notice that they no longer support Windows 98 or Windows 95. And one of the reasons they no longer support that is because they are now using certain APIs to deal, I think, with Unicode characters or something on Windows. And those particular libraries are not available in Windows 98 or Windows 95. Now, although they could have kept certain old code in place, they chose to remove that code rather than to just let it sit around in there. That is a negative for all the people still using Windows 98 and Windows 95. Of course, I say all those people, and I don't actually personally know any of them. But the point is they are removing code that they don't see as absolutely necessary, and they have run certain things against the code to try to identify code that is never called. I know that a lot of work went into that. And based on that, you are seeing that now OpenOffice should actually start faster than it did, and certain things run faster than it did. So they're working on it. But yeah, I'm sure you'll find some old stuff in there. Absolutely.
So what about what about macros in OpenOffice? I mean, what are the cool things that you can do? Or is this something that people don't want to mess around with?
Well, you know, sometimes you just need a macro. I mean, that's just the reality. My biggest complaint about macros in OpenOffice is that the macro language itself is built directly on the internals of OpenOffice. With Microsoft's macro programming language, they actually developed an object model and a programming model specifically for their macros. With OpenOffice, what they did is they developed sort of an API, something they called UNO. UNO is something else, but they wrapped the API around UNO so that you can use pretty much any programming language, Java, C++, Python, or Star Basic, which is the general macro programming language that I think of when I think of a macro, to access and modify the internals of OpenOffice. The disadvantage, however, is that you are modifying and directly accessing the internals of OpenOffice so that it is not as accessible as it could be. My opinion is that it is very difficult to write macros for OpenOffice because of that. So is it really accessible to the, quote, average user? My opinion, no. It should, something should be done. Well, I don't know. I say something should be done, but you have so much flexibility with the fact that you can write it in C++ or Java, you know, pick your programming language. That's a definite advantage.
True.
But still, you know, I don't really want to turn my mom or my dad loose on it. If you're not really a programmer, it's just really difficult to get your hands around it. And the macro recorder doesn't help a whole lot. I don't know if you've ever used the macro recorder, but...
No.
It's, I frequently use the macro recorder for quick and dirty macros, but if you actually use the macro recorder in OpenOffice, and then you look at the macro, you'll see that it does these things called dispatches. A really cool thing that OpenOffice does is it has this thing called a dispatch. And if you go choose like something like file open, internally OpenOffice might fire a dispatch to deal with that. Well, the nice thing about that is you have sort of this message that you can intercept. And if you want, you can even fire your own dispatches. And they have dispatches to do a lot of things. But the problem is that it hides the internals of the macro programming, so that if you record your macro, all it does is captures dispatches, and it doesn't actually do API level modifications. So reading a recorded macro doesn't tell you a whole lot about how to really program OpenOffice. And in fact, even worse, given that all it's really doing in the recorder is capturing dispatches, if you, say, open a dialog and do something, frequently it will only capture the dispatch to, say, open the dialog, and it won't actually capture the work that you've done. So, I think I'm rambling. Sorry.
No, that's all right. Now, do you recommend people starting with that?
Well, you know, it really kind of depends on what you want to do. If you know that you want to move your cursor around and insert very specific text every time, like, hey, I want a macro that's going to insert my name and then go to a new line. You know what? Just use the macro recorder, type your name, hit the enter key, stop recording. You have your macro. Life is good. My opinion, though, for many things, is that the best way to learn macro programming is just look at examples, which is one of the nice things, say, about my free macro document available from my web. Well, okay, I have lots of free macro documents on my website. I have a document called Andrew Macro, and it's about 500 pages right now, just filled with lots of examples. And frequently when you see a simple example, you know, here's how you do a search. If you know anything about programming, that will be enough to get you started. And so really what you're doing is you're just trying to find simple examples and putting them together. Someone said, hey, Andy, I need a macro that will allow me to select a graphic. I want to insert it into a file. And then I want to put a caption underneath it with the file name. Well, I went and grabbed an example from my database document that demonstrates how to throw up a file selection dialog complete with the file selection criteria to capture graphic files. Or in other words, you know, it'll say *.gif or *.png, that sort of thing. So I already had examples that I'd written, and I just grabbed those and threw them in. And then to insert the graphic, I just recorded a macro. And when I recorded the macro, it actually created a dispatch or showed me a dispatch where one of the arguments would be, say, the file name that I wanted to insert. So I kind of combined stuff that I had written with recorded macros, and by doing that I had a macro up in about 20 minutes. If I had done everything by hand manually, it would have taken a lot longer, because then I would have needed to have written code specifically to insert the image and make certain that it was not inserted as a link, but actually place the image in the document. So I think that you should just look at examples and use the macro recorder when you can. Although they don't all support the macro recorder. I think Impress documents may not support the macro recorder anymore. Yeah, some of them don't support it. So some, that's not an option.
Why don't they support it anymore? I mean, is it just something that they never bothered to keep up with, or did they... just too difficult to do that?
Well, there's really a couple of reasons, actually. One is that the macro recorder sort of feels like an afterthought, and I don't know if I should even use his name if I'm not certain he's the one who said it. I'd have to go back and check. One of the leading OpenOffice developers said, in his opinion, the macro recorder was so brain damaged that it probably should be completely removed from OpenOffice. But he also said, well, maybe it was him, maybe it was another guy, who said that the amount of work required to put in a really good macro recorder was probably in the neighborhood of $100,000 to $250,000. So it was a lot of money to spend to do it right, and rather than leave something that didn't work for all the bits and pieces, they chose just to remove it for certain portions. And I don't know the details as to why an Impress document or a draw document, they needed to remove it. I had never used the macro recorder in those document types anyway, so I was sort of surprised when I saw people saying, hey, where'd it go? And I went, oh, I don't know, was it ever there? Since I'd only used it for calc documents or write documents. I know I didn't really answer your question, right?
No. No, you did the best answer that you could, and it works for me, and it
Excellent.
Works for our audience. If they don't
Excellent.
Like it, they can go to hell.
They get what they pay for, huh?
That's right. Maybe on the AUG version we'll change that. I don't know.
And if they don't like it, they can... And what was that?
Now, he's just going to change it to, you can go to hell. That's what I'm
going to Excellent.
We never beep things.
Yeah, I noticed that while listening with my daughter around. Hey, honey, come here. Clamp her ears.
I blame
That's
Alan
a way to say
that.
I love you.
That's right. That's how we show we care.
That's right.
Put our hands up. Everybody put your hands over your ears now.
Mm-hmm. Hear no evil, see no evil, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you guys don't use macros much, huh?
No.
Honestly, not really. I'm trying to think of, you know, what are some really good examples of some simple macros that most people might use?
Yeah. Well, let's assume, for example, that you go to a website and they have a table of values. And you copy that table of values and you paste it into your document. But it's just not pasting properly. So maybe you paste it as text, and you know you want to turn it back into a regular text table. But to do that, you have to do some minor reformatting because of the way it pastes. So, you know, in that case, you know, I have literally had, tables that I have copied off a web page that had hundreds and hundreds of lines. and I needed to manually, for each line, repeat a series of keystrokes. You know, control right arrow twice, hit delete twice, hit the end key, hit delete, you know, that sort of thing. And because I was able to reconstruct a sequence of keystrokes that were identical for each line, which makes sense, right? I mean, if I have a table, and if the table has three columns, then what it really does is it puts each column on a new line, maybe when I paste it, and I need the lines to be all on, or I need each table line to be on a single line, separated maybe by a tab. You know, it might be as simple as hit the end key, hit tab to insert my tab character, press the delete key to bring the next line up. I do that twice. Then I arrow down once and hit the home key to go to the beginning of the line. And if that is my recorded macro, I just then run my macro, you know, 100 times, and I have my 100 lines all ready to go. So, the simpler it is, the easier the macro is to write, at least without getting, you know, carpal tunnel. Your macro will prevent that, right?
Well, that's convenient.
And someone just recently sent me an email and said, hey, I'm looking at a macro to deal with these numbers and increment some numbers. And it turns out that what they're really doing is it has something to do with master keys. And each of the height adjustments on your keys, those little bumps, have a number. And you have your master value, and then you have ways that you can increment numbers. And they wanted to create an entire series of numbers that would represent, rather than the master key, the slave keys. And because there was a very clear way that they changed the numbers, the macro is just perfect for that. And the guy that said, oh, I have to insert 100 images into my file. Wow, 100? That's quite a few images. Well, you know, a macro is a natural for that. You know, you record a macro or you write a macro to insert an image and, you know, do whatever you want with the image. So just anything you need to do that's repetitive. If you write a lot of letters, maybe you want a macro that inserts your name and address, you know, the return address, for example.
Okay.
Anything you do that's repetitive, you know, if you find you're doing something a lot and you go, oh, I hate doing that. Of course, sometimes you're just, you know, not using OpenOffice right. When I was writing my book, OpenOffice.org Macros Explained, I did not understand at all how fields worked in OpenOffice. You know, you can insert a caption. And when you insert a caption, it literally inserts a particular field. And that field has a little equation in it. So, you know, when I insert a caption, you know, for a table, it might say, you know, the equation might be table plus one. And table is the name of my field. So the first time, table has no value. Well, when it uses it and sets table equal to table plus one, well, suddenly it has the value one. Well, the advantage to that is if I insert another field with that in it, it just keeps incrementing the field, and so my tables are all properly numbered. But I didn't know I could do that, so I just labeled it, hey, this is table 1. And everywhere in my document I said, see table 1. Well, then when I wanted to insert something before table 1, well, uh-oh, table 1 just became table 2. But if I have 30 tables, I had to renumber them all. I actually wrote a macro that would take care of that. I didn't realize I could just do it using fields and captions, and I could insert a cross-reference directly to my table captions. And, you know, I mean, OpenOffice will do all that for you automatically if you just learn how to do it. So if you do that kind of writing, you should learn how to do that, for what it's worth. I learned how to do that sort of thing from Jean Hollis Weber, if you've heard of her.
I think we had her on the show, didn't we?
I think you did. I know you had Solvig Highland on the show. She was a lot of fun. I miss Gene Weber's. I need to go back and find that and listen to it. Just out of curiosity.
I don't know if we did have her on the show. Hold on, let me check. But you can continue on while I check.
Okay, yeah. Well, Gene Weber's written some great books about open office.
I don't think we had Gene Weber on.
She's hanging out in Australia.
Weber, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we had her on the show. We had,
Solvig.
Oh, who's... Yeah, Solvig.
Yeah.
So now, the stuff you do for the Open Office Macros, I mean, do you officially work for Sun?
I do not. Not at all. In fact, the way I got into all this is, When I was doing Windows development, and Windows 3 was around, and then, you know, into Windows 95, development on Windows just wasn't very stable. So we did all of our development under OS 2. And I used OS 2 rather than Windows. So I was not able to, say, use Microsoft Office because I was using OS 2. And when my favorite word processor, which was called the Scribe, went out of business and they stopped producing it, I was looking for something else to use. And a buddy of mine, hi Mike if you're listening, said, hey, try Star Office. And one of the ways I learned to use Star Office and then later Open Office is I was on the mailing lists, and whenever anyone would ask a question, I tried to go solve it. So, you know, some people said, hey, look, he's such a nice guy. It's like, well, actually, no, I'm being very intentional about learning how to use the software. And the one thing that I noticed that no one typically knew how to answer was, how do I do this in a macro? So I just started writing down, well, you know, hey, look, here's a question on macros. Let's solve it. Gee, that question came up again. So then I just started putting it in a document that I maintained. And then someone said, hey, how do you do this? I said, oh, I have a document that tells me how to do that. And they said, can I see that document? I went, okay, here you go. So I just got into macros just because I wanted to learn how to do it. So Sun doesn't pay me. I do it all for free.
So then what's your, like, official job?
I work for a company that officially is sort of a research type company, which means that my actual title is something like research scientist or something like that. I'd have to go look it up. And my general job responsibilities would be enterprise architecture, maybe designing software, maybe even writing software. On my current project, we are doing some work for the government, right now we are looking at their current architecture system, and the government has asked, hey, we want you to use OpenOffice to develop your text documents. It was kind of fun sitting around the table as everyone was discussing, hey, were you able to download and install OpenOffice? Yeah, I was able to download it. I haven't installed it yet. And they come around to me, and I'm like, yeah, I wrote a book on it.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that was kind of fun to do. I'm not proud.
So then, do you work exclusively in Windows still, or?
No, absolutely not. I am just as likely to be developing in Windows as I am in Linux. I know that the desktop that they provide me at work is Windows. Whenever we develop a large system for deployment, you know, some clients want something that we deploy in Windows, and some clients want things that we deploy in Linux. My home desktop is Linux. I keep a Windows box around for the few things that run better on Windows. Video editing, for example, or my tag software. Haven't found good substitutes on Linux yet. My next big computer, I will have but one, I think. I think I will get rid of the Windows box. Then I will use, VirtualBox? I think I can run Windows from that.
Yeah, wonderful software.
Yeah, I've never used it. I haven't decided if I'm going to do that or if I'm just going to dual boot. When I'm looking at video editing, I'm thinking, I don't know, how many CPU cycles does VirtualBox take? I mean, does it really eat a lot of CPU time? I mean, if I'm going to be running 64-bit Vista and processing video for 12 hours at a stretch, I mean, literally it takes that long to run. Maybe I want to run native.
Well,
did I mention I have a lot of interest?
Really, yeah, well, it runs really well. You know, it runs really well depending on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
While you're doing other things with it, you know. Same with VMware. I'm a big VMware guy myself. But
you get paid to say that.
No, not really.
Lies.
I just like it. VMware works. You know, the reason that I say that I like VMware better than VirtualBox, I give it to you in a nutshell, is because you would know, anybody who runs VirtualBox, who wants to be able to access their virtual machine from their network, will know exactly why I prefer VMware, because that's a pain in the ass. But VMware, it's really, really easy to do that, and VMware server free, right? So why the hell not? But now to get back to that, running all your machines in a VMware or a VirtualBox instances. Wonderful, and the thing that most people forget is, like, you know, when they start asking about how many CPU cycles it takes and things like that, is that you don't have to run it. You don't have to run that virtual machine unless you really need it for something, so it really doesn't matter.
Oh, well, I guess my concern isn't that I slow down my Linux box. My concern is that I'm processing video in a Windows virtual box and whether or not VMware or whatever inserts enough overhead that it slows me down a lot. And if it slows me down 25%, and if I'm running a job that takes...
You mean if it slows you down outside of running it natively on the box?
Yes. Yes.
What I have found with my many, many VMware machines is that Windows... In particular, Windows XP seems to run better, more efficiently, and more stable in a VM than it runs on native hardware.
Interesting.
And I would probably be willing to back that one up with money. I mean, I've done enough of them and looked at them so far, and they really tend to run better under virtual hardware than they do on the native stuff.
You heard it here first. Anybody who has problems with VMware, tap the Link Mac machine at link@thelinuxlink.net. Send your hate mail there, and he'll respond with cash.
Yep. Respond with cash,
that's
huh?
Right. One penny per person. That's right.
Wow, what if you got a million people?
That's what, $100?
That would be awesome.
One penny per person, and you have to stop by the house to pick it up, because I'm not spending, you know, 40 cents mailing a penny. Forget it. It's not going to happen.
But so the worst you could do is just try and see what happens. It would be really interesting to hear how well that went.
Yeah. Yeah.
I figured they have virtual servers set up doing rendering. Don't they, on render farms? Or have they not gotten into that yet?
Well, you know what? Most render farms, at least... I have a couple of friends that work some places that... You know, some big studio places that do rendering and things like that. And most render farms really, at this point, already use Linux. for rendering.
So they don't need the...
They don't use Windows anymore. I'm not saying that, that's really the case with video editing. However, if you really were interested in video editing under Linux, we all know that it's possible to do so and come out with a very nice and polished product. I mean, look at... actually, there's a lot of people that do it. Yeah. The Blender Project and... what else am I thinking of? Like the Source Show and stuff, that's all done. You know, that's all video stuff. It's all done soup to nuts on Linux, too. So it's possible to do it. I haven't myself, but I've seen the finished product several times. So.
Well, my opinion based on all the people with whom I spoke was that if you want to do nonlinear video editing, the better software is available on Windows, especially if you're an amateur. They certainly have very, very good high-end software that would be used in studios, and as you said, like, I mean, they're literally rendering, cartoons and that sort of thing. I guess they don't call them cartoons, huh? Animation on complete farms and doing a great job. And I know they use tools on Linux, say like in Last Samurai, to say add in the arrows, you know, that sort of thing. But for the average home user, they're really much better off. Seems to be the general consensus from people that I think know more about it than I. And based on my limited trials, I have a tendency to agree with them. But I use Windows for almost nothing, you know, and so it just kind of irks me that whenever I edit my video, I go fire up a Windows box I built for my wife that she even stopped using because she said, you know, your Linux box is here, it's always on, and it does what I want. So she's moved off Microsoft Word, and now she does everything in OpenOffice. From my perspective, that's a big win.
Cool.
So you're only that one step away.
Yeah, that and my taxes. But the taxes I can do on a virtual machine, you know.
Sure, and you can also do them online, too. What is that tax program they do online now?
TurboTax?
Yeah, TurboTax. You can do it online, right? There's an online edition.
Well, I think if you have special cases, you might not be able to use the online version.
I keep waiting for Dan to write us a TurboTax for Linux. You know?
Oh, yeah. There we go.
But, come
on,
man.
My to-do
list. I did the Bash Potter thing. It's your turn now. Grab it and run, man. Both hands.
You know, I don't think
you should hurry up because tax season
time
is coming.
I don't think the actual application is difficult. It's more of the you have to get the like all the different state forms and stuff and requirements for the states and federal requirements. I think that's where it becomes a pain.
Whenever I've done a search, and I did a search for a presentation I gave at Linux Fest here in Columbus, Ohio. I feel bad. I feel like I'm sort of like directing you away from OpenOffice. Sorry, guys. I was searching for many different categories of software, and one of them was tax software. And really the best I could find was sort of, yeah, if you want a real simple 1040 form, maybe you could find something on Linux. Nothing at all that was considered really ready for prime time. You weren't going to get the special forms. You weren't going to get the state level stuff. And if you really wanted to do your taxes and you really wanted to stay in Linux and completely avoid Windows, well, either do them by hand or do, as you said, the online using a web browser. That was how it looked to me, in September of 2008, so 3-4 months ago.
I don't know, Verbal Sam, what about Money Dance? I don't think Money Dance does taxes, does it?
No, No, it doesn't. But if I remember correctly, Money Dance is produced by a company in France. I think it was... I mean, have you ever used Money Dance?
I think I tried it. Was that... I thought that was produced by a guy locally.
Money
Not
Dance?
Not locally, but in the U.S. Is it some friend?
Well, actually, all I have to do is go back to my... Financial software was one of the things I bothered to cover, so... sure helps if I sort things alphabetically.
Maybe it is. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong thing.
But where did I hide it?
I'm looking at the website now.
It's what we really need, though, you know. We need to have some good tax software on Linux. Somebody needs to write it.
Well, before they will write it, you need people that will buy it.
People will buy it. If you write it, they will come.
I'd buy it.
Yeah, we had the developer.
See, there you go. I'd buy it, too.
Sean Riley. Well, wait a minute. He lives in Edinburgh. Where's Edinburgh?
Isn't that Canada?
Good question. I don't know.
Should know. I grew up in Michigan, and that was almost Canada, right?
Aren't they moving Michigan to Canada? They're turning it over? Edinburgh, City of Edinburgh, United Kingdom.
Oh. Well, he might be in the UK.
Yeah.
My only comments I had on Money Dance, now that I've forgotten all about all these things, is I listed the GNU Cash and Money Dance have similar features for the home user, complete with double entry accounting systems, and those that use Money Dance seem to love it, and that is a for-pay product geared specifically towards non-accountants. So...
Oh, well, look at this. Tax Geek, which was posted on our forum. It's a, well, I wish they would have had the... It's a Mozilla-based U.S. income tax program that includes forms 1040, schedules ABC, CEZ, DEK-1, 1065R, and many other forms. Wow.
And those are all
sweet.
Yeah. Wonder... Tax program, federal income tax, is written in response to demand for the open source U.S. federal income tax program that works on GNU Linux-based computers. I'll post it in our IRC. I wonder how... I should try that this year.
That's great.
I'll send you a copy link and told you I wrote it.
That's awesome. I tell you what, you should try it this year, and if you don't get audited, I'll try it next year.
Well, you know what?
I use H&R Block. It's a whole lot easier.
You know what? I used H&R Block last year, but they charge you like $9 million, you know? They're like, you know, your tax return is $900, and we're taking $875 of it. So.
Well, Alan's a millionaire.
Might have never been that bad.
I have a coupon for $20 from H&R Block. I'll send it to you. That'll double your return.
That'll cover the stamp they put on the return.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
I do have an OpenOffice macro question for you. Are OpenOffice macros, I take it they are cross-platform, like if you develop one on an OpenOffice using Linux, that it'll run in Windows or Mac versions?
Okay, first let's define very carefully what we mean by a macro. Certainly, if you write it in Star Basic, it will run on any platform. You're good to go. And it will look the same on all the platforms, even if you use dialogues and that sort of thing. And it's one of the things that I really like about the macros in OpenOffice. It is possible for you to write other things that are macro-like that use languages other than Star Basic that may not be cross-platform. But if you just write it as a macro, because you can write a macro in JavaScript if you want. I mean, even right from within OpenOffice. I mean, it supports it. I don't do it because Star Basic is absolutely the easiest in which to write for most things. But yeah, it completely cross-platform. It's a great thing. I love it. And you know, someone mentioned this thing about Michael Meeks to me recently. You mind if I comment on that just because you brought it up or someone did?
No, go ahead.
Go for it.
For people that aren't aware of what happened is there's a man by the name of Michael Meeks. Michael works, or at least he used to work for Novell. I don't know if he still does. I have no reason to believe he does not. And he does OpenOffice development for Novell. And I believe that he has been working on some of the things that allow OpenOffice macros to have some level of compatibility with Microsoft Office macros. So if you have a certain type of macro that works on OpenOffice, using the code that Michael Meeks and the other people from Novell, you might be able to run that macro natively on OpenOffice. And Michael Meeks wrote something where he analyzed who has been providing code into the OpenOffice branch. And one of the things that he noted is that it looks like they are receiving very little code, and in fact less code over time, from quote, independent sources or people outside of Sun. And he also discussed in his complaint saying that OpenOffice might be dying or was sick, was that Sun Microsystems has an awful lot of control over what is integrated into OpenOffice. And so understanding, first of all, Michael's bias. He doesn't work at Sun. He works at another company. And then he is mostly off on his own, or their group are off doing their own thing. And they are doing development that is integrated directly in with OpenOffice. And then when they have code that works, and if they want to integrate those changes back into OpenOffice, they have to essentially hand it over to Sun and let Sun decide what is integrated and what is not. And so he wrote this thing that some people considered scathing. I read it and I thought, yeah, okay, most of what he said is right. When you write something and you hand it over to Sun, well, they're the people that bankroll and do most of the development, and they exert a lot of control over what ends up in there. And if you come along and you are not working for Sun, everything you do is going to be reviewed by them, and they'll decide if it goes in or not. But on the other hand, I don't think it's fair to analyze to see where the commits are occurring, because one of the things that Sun did right is they realized that entry into OpenOffice development is very difficult. So if you want to change OpenOffice to do something specific, and if that change is sufficiently complex that you don't want to just write a simple repetitive macro, you literally want to make a serious change. For example, you want to write a grammar checker or something like that might take a lot of CPU cycles. It's really difficult to get in there and to write that code. I spent a couple weeks off and on just trying to build OpenOffice on my Fedora Linux box. and I ran into one problem after another. Oh, you need this dependency, you need that dependency. And then even if you work out the dependencies, the code is huge. You download a gigabyte of source code, and then you're going to let the build run for, what, 24 hours or something? I mean, it's just amazingly difficult, in my opinion, from the time when I tried it, to even approach this. But what Sun did is they said, you know, let's allow add-ons and extensions. And they've developed this mechanism whereby you can develop functionality and you can release it and it's not actually part of the OpenOffice code base. The report writer for database is done that way, for example. The grammar checkers that are currently available are done as an add-on. Now, to be fair, with the grammar checkers, they actually worked with OpenOffice, and the OpenOffice developers created an API that facilitates the grammar checkers. So some work was actually done with them. But you can develop your own add-ons and extensions and that sort of thing without actually contributing to the code base. So when you look at it and you say, well, hey, look, these people aren't, you don't have external people writing stuff for OpenOffice. Well, you are ignoring all those people that are writing things as add-ons and as extensions, and all the people in the documentation project that write code that is not checked in, because you have, you know, numerous people writing documentation and checking it and translating it into other languages, and they're doing all that, and that is not showing up as check-ins. So that's sort of my take on all that.
Is there a point, is there a point when a macro would become a plugin, or a plugin could be considered more of a macro, or are they actually two different things?
Well, you can release a macro as sort of an add-on, and in fact, boy, I would need to look up the definition to make certain I get it absolutely correct. Let me read these definitions to you if I can find them very quickly so that I read them absolutely accurately. No, do not update my things. What are they? I have them written down because I can never remember. What are they? An extension may be a macro scripting library written in basic JavaScript or Python, for example. And at that point, your extension is really just macros. That's it. You can write an extension that is new components entirely. So you can create your own internal objects which will integrate directly into OpenOffice. And you can even write extensions that are non-code things such as templates, auto text, items, galleries, or even language dictionaries. You can do all that as extensions. So extension is the broad category, okay, that includes everything. Well, after that, they sort of subdivide them, and then calc has what they call add-ins, which will provide new calc functions. So you can write entirely new functions for calc, and they will integrate in as, I mean, literally functions in calc. So that would be an add-in. They have a chart add-in, and that will allow you to provide new chart types. You can create entirely new chart types. You can create a data pilot extension if you've ever used the data pilot. I don't use it much. Then they have a linguistic component. What do they call that? Just linguistic component, it looks like. And then so we've had add-ins. Then they have add-ons that provide new functionality, including new user interface elements such as menu entries and new top-level menus and toolbars. So globally, I can write a macro and turn it into an extension. And as soon as I turn it into an extension, you have the ability to just say, hey, take that extension, and it'll automatically suck it into OpenOffice and make it available. It's really cool. But the fact that I can do that means that I can have an extension. I guess extension is the right word for the overarching thing, now that I've looked up the actual terms as at least the OpenOffice people use them. At Sun.
We had a question in our IRC from a gentleman named Verbal who wanted to know what was the name of the book that you wrote.
The title is OpenOffice.org, Macros Explained. That is published by Hensenwerke Publishing. Well, okay, I say it Hensenwerke. I spent time in Germany. Sorry. Hensenwerke, Hensenwerke. But if you just if you go to Amazon and look up OpenOffice.org and the word macros, you'll find me. Or you'll find the book. I wrote the book back before 2.0 came out, and I indicated a lot of things that would be available in 2, and I was right on every account. Actually, I was in such close contact with the developers that I sent a copy of my book signed to one of the Sun employees in Germany. To say thank you for all his help. Now that's the book that's actually sold that earns me minimal amount of money. And if you go to my website at Pitonyak, that's like you want a pit sandwich on yak bread, so it would be pitonyak.org. I have things like Andrew Macro .odt that you can download, and that just has numerous pages of example macros. If you go to my database page, I have some ramblings, as I call it, on database stuff that have a lot of examples that work on database. Although we'll see how that changes. Right now, when you have a base document, you put your macros, you can put your macros in individual forms, but you cannot put a macro in a base document itself. And that is going to change, so that they will pull macros out of the forms and they will put them in the base document. And I think that I noticed that change has finally been finished. It was scheduled to go in 3.0.
Regarding your book, someone had mentioned that it was published 5 years ago. Is the information in there still relevant to OpenOffice 3, 2 and 3, actually?
They take so long to deprecate interfaces that it is still pretty accurate. And when I say pretty accurate, I think I'm aware of one interface I discussed that has been deprecated, and that's it. And the items that I predicted for 2.0, complete with examples, are all present and working. On the other hand, because of when it was written, say the base component didn't exist, so I don't discuss the base portion at all. So my opinion is that, yes, the information is accurate. And, in fact, the first part of the book has itemized lists of all the commands that are available in BASIC. I think they've added a few more. Maybe they're mostly just constants. I think now they support some of the VB constants. I might have documented the fact that that was the case in my book. Oh, look at that. I guess I did. Okay, well, I guess that's already in there. I don't remember offhand what else they've added. But my opinion is that, yes, it is. Oh, yeah, LSET and RSET. Yeah, I document that, and I think they finally removed that from the language. I'd have to check to verify, but yeah, it's pretty current just because they don't change the internal interface that much. They've been very intentional about that. When they publish an interface, for the most part, they don't change the interface unless they can demonstrate a real need. Does it make sense to still buy the book 5 years later?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, given that, I think so. Copyright 2004. So that means that the book, yeah, just turned 5 years old. Sort of. At least it will in a couple months. Yep, I think so. You know, but if you're not sure, you know, download my free documents. I have a lot of stuff out there for free as well. I do have material in my book that is not in my free document. For example, my free document I know has errors in the way that I document some of the commands since, for example, there were errors in the online help for some of the language syntax, and I don't know for sure if they fixed those or not. I remember specifically pointing them out to some developers, so maybe someone fixed them. And those errors are probably in my free document as well, but I found and corrected all those in my in the published book. I actually considered removing that entire section from the end of my free document. I don't know if anyone cares. No one's ever said. So if anyone writes in and says, no, I love that section, leave it. Well, maybe I'll leave it. Otherwise, I might remove it just because the free document's becoming so large. Move it into something else.
Just publish that.
Yeah, well. The free document? Well,
yeah.
I suppose I could. I could self-publish it. Well, I have a lot of things on my website.
Yeah,
all right, here's another question.
You have a lot of Perl stuff on your website, I saw.
Yeah. I've done a lot of Perl code. I like Perl. I'm very efficient in Perl.
Again. I got to turn my levels back up again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question for you from the IRC.
Yes.
Big Ed wants to know is if there is a way, any way to, or if someone is working on a way to get Visio files in OpenOffice.
Ooh. Yeah.
Better?
That's better.
I recently saw something about that. How are they doing Visio import? OpenOffice forum. I'm not, certainly nothing is currently available. According to even the OpenOffice wiki, it claims that they lack a Visio importer. I remember a few people chatting about it. I just don't remember whether or not they were going to really do the work or not. My opinion is that right now the answer is no. And if anyone knows differently, let me know. But I have never seen one, and if I did, I would certainly have it. I just remember people talking about whether they should do it or not.
Think they will?
I don't know. I mean, can you even import a Visio document into, like, Microsoft Word, and Microsoft currently owns Visio?
I don't know. It's a good question. You can export it into a format that Word might attempt to understand.
Well, typically when I have something done in Visio, if I'm using Visio, I convert it to a, say a single image like a PNG or something like that, and then I just use that. The disadvantage, of course, to that is you lose the fact that it's an import. I mean, you lose all information about it. Which is unfortunate, right?
Yeah.
At least if you go, if you look at the PDF importer, if you import a PDF into your write document, it retains certain things about the structure that you've imported, assuming you knew there was a PDF importer for OpenOffice, which is an active extension. I mean, they are actively developing it. It has a long way to go. But when they're done, they want you literally to be able to round-trip a document so that if I had a write document, I should be able to export it to a PDF and then import that PDF back into write, make changes, and then export it back out again. And right now, it's not there yet. I mean, it works great for importing, but it doesn't have that level of functionality. And for Visio, no. I'm just not. I don't ever remember seeing specifically that it worked. I think they proposed something for a summer code project maybe. Here it is. Create a Visio import filter for draw. Yeah. Someone proposed it, and I believe that was not chosen by Google.
Does Visio, does draw do Visio type diagrams and stuff, like networking and everything, and do they have plugins for the different device images?
I have some things like networking symbols. Where did I get those? I don't remember if it was an extension or not, but I have some. My opinion is that Draw is definitely not Visio, okay? I mean, that's just the reality. Now, that said, I have done a lot of very Visio-type things. For example, I draw my boxes, and I put connectors between my boxes, and then I move my boxes around, and it maintains the connectors to them. You can even... I think I can even get some UML symbols. Are there any particular symbols that they were looking for besides, computer-type symbols? Is that right? Or networking-type symbols?
I don't know. I was asking, not anybody else. Because talking about Visio extended into what I've ever used something like that, or I've used DIA and stuff for networking and UML diagramming, but that was it.
Because there's a guy, I'd have to look him up to see who he was. Kawai seems to sit in my mind, who was working on collecting numerous little graphics things and doing SVG imports, and I wrote some macros for him, and the purpose of the macros that I wrote were to take entire directories of, say, small graphics files and then put them in libraries so that you could create galleries. And then you can use those galleries inside of Draw. Well, actually, I guess you could use the galleries inside of, whatever you want, right? So you can... I mean, I don't know if you've ever used the galleries inside of Draw, but you can literally create collections of images using certain, themes. Like if you find the rulers, they will have a bunch of little ruler icons. Or if you go to the bullets theme that's included. They will have all sorts of different bullet types. I mean, even including coffee beans and popcorn to be used for bullets. I mean, it's really nice. And somewhere I have network icons that I found, and I would have to go look at the OpenOffice Extensions website. But if you install OpenOffice, you should go to the Extensions website because you will find things that are just amazing. For example, Sun took a bunch of templates, and these are very well-done templates, and they packaged them into an extension. So it's like, hey, look, here's 100 different templates that I can download that are themed for certain types of things. And they don't distribute them with OpenOffice, but they'll give them to you as an extension. I mean, just a bunch of fun things. And I use the Grammar Checker, which is just an extension. You know, free, download it. You know, off you go. It's a great thing. And I don't know if they have galleries up there or not. But people are working on that.
Sweet.
Highly recommended.
Alan, do you have a question? Alan?
I'm still here. I didn't realize I had the mute button on before.
Oh, you were asking your question, I take it, and it was muted, right?
No. I had no questions. I was starting to talk, and didn't realize I had the mute button on. Like, no! Sorry.
Does the OpenOffice run on Solaris?
Yes. And
I'm
in fact,
curious. I thought it...
Well, you know, the entire reason that Sun has OpenOffice in the first place is, you know, I mean, how many people does Sun have working for them?
Three now.
Yeah, three people. So, you know, Sun had like, you know, 10,000 employees or, I mean, just some number like that. I don't remember, just some big number. And most of these employees had both a Windows computer and a Solaris box. Because, you know, Sun is big on Solaris. And they said, well, okay, now let's assume we want to give a word processor to all these people. Well, okay, we need to buy 10,000 licenses of, say, Microsoft Office. But wait, okay, we need something to also run on Solaris. Maybe that's 20,000 licenses. Okay, it's cheaper for us to buy a company. And so they went out and bought the StarWriter product and turned that into StarOffice, and then they released that, and it became OpenOffice. So, yes, absolutely. OpenOffice will run on Solaris. I mean, they're big on Solaris, and that was one of the big reasons they bought OpenOffice. Well, they bought the product that they turned into OpenOffice in the first place so that it would work on Solaris.
So what version of OpenOffice are you using now, or do you have to use multiple versions to...
Well, it depends on whether I'm writing... sometimes I write for, say, like... you know, maybe write an article about a new version coming out. And when I'm writing about a new version that's coming out, I will obviously be using the absolute latest development builds. But since no one has asked me to write any articles, I'm using the standard 3.0 build, which I think has a lot of nice, really cool stuff that they just sort of added. That it's kind of hidden away that, you know, unless you're looking for it, you won't notice.
Like what?
Well, like if you load 3.0 and you load Writer, and then you look down in the lower right-hand corner. And the lower right-hand corner now, they have like a little zoom bar that you can use to set your view. You know, do I want it at 100%, 200%, 50%? It's now down there in the little or lower right-hand corner. Also next to that, you can click a button, which is immediately to the left of that, that determines your view. And you can tell it, okay, show me a sort of what I would call a side-by-side view. And if you have, you know, one of those big fancy monitors, that's really nice. So, for example, if you load Andrew Macro, I specifically write it so that chapters always start on the right page. I mean, if you open a book, where's page one? It's on the right. You know, it's usually not on the left. Is that right? Well, I always write it so it's on one side or the other. I guess I should load open now. Make certain I'm not lying here. Boom. And because I write it that way, yeah, I do. I write it so that the first page is on the right. They have these little pictures of pages, and if you click on those pages, it determines what view you see. So you can do all that just right there. You know, I mean, it's a view they didn't even have before 3. Also, immediately below the scroll bar on the right-hand side, they have a little icon to go to the previous page and the next page, and then in between the previous and next page icons, which are just below the scroll bar on the right-hand side, they have a little button you can click on to flip open that navigation bar. And actually what that navigation bar is when you select an item, you can then that will determine what those previous and next buttons are. So for me right now, it defaults to previous and next page, but if I click on the navigation button and I click on heading, well then I can go to the previous or next heading. So I can really quickly jump through my headings, or I can click on a graphic. And then after I do that, I can immediately jump to the previous or next graphic. You know, I can go to the previous or next selection or bookmark or section or table or text frame or even control or table formula or index entry. I mean, it's really cool stuff. It's like, wow, who thought of this? You know, so when I see people saying, oh, the interface is terrible, it's like, well, what are you talking about? Compared to what? Compared to the latest version of Word? Oh, my goodness. I watched a friend of mine when he installed the latest version of Word. He had a lot of not nice things to say.
Are you sure he's a friend of yours? Because a friend wouldn't let a friend do that.
Well, he was doing it at work. He was kind of required to. So, yeah, I think so. I think he's a friend. But it was kind of fun watching him. How do you do this? And he calls me over because he knows I know about word processors. And it's like, hey, dude, you're alone on this. Sorry.
So has he gone back to, has he seen the errors of his way? Is he using Office still, or is he going to use the OpenOffice?
Well, for some of his, in the Office environment, a lot of what I do, I still do in OpenOffice. So when I write documentation at work, I usually write it in OpenOffice. But after you get to a certain level of complexity inside of the document, if I have a deliverable and that deliverable is specified to be as a Microsoft Office document as the final deliverable, I have a pretty good handle on what OpenOffice is able to bring in and kick around very easily. But if I have certain complicated paragraph styles and complicated graphic placements and complicated fields, after I get it working in a certain way or to a certain point, I'll switch it over to Microsoft Office and I'll keep it there. Luckily for me, no one has forced me to move to the latest version of Microsoft Office at work. From what I've seen, it doesn't look like it's easy to deal with.
So what are your thoughts on the whole, speaking of Microsoft, what are your thoughts on the whole Office Open XML format?
Oh my goodness. I think it's sort of a travesty that the ISO organization even allowed it to become a standard when it has numerous irregularities in the quote standard. And I say quote standard because I don't really consider it to be a well-specified standard. And one of the things that really bothers me about that file format is that it still has proprietary sections and fully allows me to dump proprietary things into it. I mean, that's ignoring, you know, the irregularities and the voting and that sort of thing. I mean, the standard itself is thousands of pages long. I mean, it's just asinine. And a lot of the final specs would say things like, okay, and this should do it to, say, like an Excel document. It's like, well, that's not... The only way that's really specified is by picking a version of Excel and saying, well, let's go try it and see how it works. But even that changes over time. The open document format is very carefully specified, especially, say, in the way formulas behave and that sort of thing. And they took the time to do it right. I'm of the opinion that what happened is a lot of governments said, oh, wow, you're right. We can't just use Microsoft binary formats that are secret and Microsoft won't tell you how to look at them. We need to use some open XML format. And so Microsoft went, uh-oh, they're going to open Office, so we're just going to throw something together and toss it out the door. Which, you know, I don't know, maybe it was the right thing for them to do, or maybe they should have just taken the ODF and gone with it. But when you have that open XML that Microsoft developed, their standard literally says, not only do you support some of these things we're mentioning, but you also allow us to fully embed any Microsoft Office document. I mean, you know, what kind of XML standard is that, right? Yeah, I've saved it in Office Open XML, and it has proprietary sections that aren't documented anywhere. I mean, it's just asinine to me. I don't understand. I don't understand at all how it got through any process, because it just doesn't make sense to me. It's just ridiculous, in my opinion.
So, what was that thing you mentioned that Microsoft is allowed to dump any Microsoft document into the...
Assume I have a doc file.
Right.
Or, say, a Visio document. I mean, I don't know. Is Visio part of Microsoft Office? I mean, maybe it won't allow specifically a Visio file. But it allows me, I believe, to specifically say, I'm including that document over there and suck it in. And then they store it as a binary object. So it means that anyone that fully supports the standard as specified needs to allow you to take any version of any Microsoft document and include it inside of the XML document. So it's you know, I mean, it's sort of like in I can embed a PNG file, right? I can just take a graphic, and that's a binary file in a specified format. And typically, they provide some mechanism for embedding a photograph or a picture or something like that. Well, they allow you in OpenXML to literally embed an entire doc file or an entire Excel file.
But. If you embed a PNG file into a document, the Office application has to be able to display or read or work with PNG files. So does that mean then your Office document has to be able to work with that Word document file?
Exactly.
But how can that be if they don't publish it? It's not really open.
Exactly. See, that's just one of my complaints. And I think that it's very telling that Microsoft has said flat out that they are not going to even support OpenXML until after they've supported Open Document Format natively. So,
well, I guess that's a plus.
So they're not even going to, I mean, they are not even immediately supporting OpenXML. They were just trying to get something through to try to get it approved so that then they can say, well, look, we have this OpenXML standard and people should use it. But that is my understanding of some of the primary complaints about that particular standard. Of course, my concern with them supporting the open document format is just how well will they, you know, read it in and write it out. I don't, I'll be parroting your words back to you since, you know, I know you've discussed this on previous shows, but, I mean, look what they did with Java, right?
Well, we all know that it's not a standard unless Microsoft says it's a standard, so.
Right, you know. So, you know, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I don't see it as a good thing. You know, it's a huge document that's complex. They didn't take any time to put it together. They cobbled something together out of necessity, and they, because they didn't want people to be able to use OpenOffice, or they wanted to stave that off. I mean, that was sort of their goal.
Well, you make it sound like they're doing some shady things there, and I can't see that coming from Microsoft. They have our best interests at heart, and they only want the world to be able to use computers in a functional manner.
You know, I think Microsoft has done a lot of things that I would categorize as bad and evil, but I think that they also produce, you're going to suddenly hit the mute button, right? I think they've done a lot of really good products. And I think
they are the bastion of innovation.
Well, what Microsoft is really good at is marketing and suppressing the competition. They are really, really good at that. I went to a Microsoft-sponsored event one time. This was a long time ago, and so I sort of have only vague memories of exactly why I was there or what the intent was. But what I can say is that they had people hyped up, and they were trying to make it really exciting and throwing T-shirts out to the crowd. And they really, really understand what it takes to get people's attention. I mean, they really do. And, you know, I have used their visual development tools. And I got to tell you, there are many things I really like about them. I mean, they do a lot of things right. Now, I don't know if they stole all those ideas or not. You know, I don't know. But I do know there are a lot of things where they just flat out stole. Well, stole, such a harsh word, right? Borrowed other people's ideas.
Enhanced.
And then they either did them better or crushed the competition. And crushing the competition may have meant, well, I don't know. We saw what happened when DOJ went after them for what happened with Netscape and IE and going to people and saying, hey, if you do this, you lose your benefits. We charge you more.
Yeah, but that's only here in America. You know, in other countries, they have successfully pulled their hat out of their asses.
Well, I do remember during that OpenXML stuff when they found out that some people had been, quote, paid for their votes, and the people that, you know, did the paying said, no, they misunderstood what all that stuff was for. I think they do pretty good marketing though. It's like, okay, here you have to give $100 million worth of stuff to schools. Great. Okay, well that'll cost us $10 million because we're giving them $100 million in software, and it's just the cost of giving, you know, a disc to every school or whatever they have to do. And then in the end, what happens? All the kids learn how to use the Microsoft products, and that's all they know. I mean, it's just brilliant on Microsoft's part, right? I worked on a very large project, and we had two companies, and we could have used either product. One company said, hey, if you're a developer, you can take and use this for free, and you don't have to pay a dime until you go to production. The other company had this special license agreement, and even though I had a license I could use, it was controlled, and I had to download it from someone, and there were political implications about who got to use it, so I was never given access. Well, guess whose product we're using right now? We're using the product that the developers were able to download and use for free that worked. Well, Microsoft has been very good about getting their products out in front of people when they are in that, quote, formative stage, and then they put them over the barrel and when it's time to go to production. Sort of. Clearly they're making a lot of money at it. They're very good at that.
What they need to do is take over OpenOffice and extend that into their own Office product.
Indeed. See how that works.
Yeah, because it is an older product. It's more mature.
Yeah, I should go look up the numbers on exactly when those came out. I was really amused when I saw that the OpenOffice-based product came out before Word. I think that Word, when it was first released, was released on Mac, maybe? And I think that the first version of OpenOffice was on CPM. But that's all a vague memory. I could be spreading, you know, rumors and lies. Misinformation.
We don't like misinformation on this show. It makes us angry.
We're back to the I'm great, right? Misinformation.
Yes. You know what? I have a question touching base with something you had said earlier about the OpenOffice builds. Do you use OpenOffice from that's supplied by your distro of choice, or do you use OpenOffice from
I almost always use the official packaged OpenOffice. And
that's from your distro, right? Not from...
No.
Or do you get the one from Sun?
I almost always use the one from Sun. And the reason that I usually do that is because I have run across numerous bugs that were introduced in the conversion process. And the bugs that I have run across, were either related to, well, were frequently related to conversion to 64-bit, since I run a 64-bit operating system. And actually what's happened as I've gone from distro to distro is a couple distributions ago in Fedora, I found a problem in their conversion that affected macros and didn't allow macros to work, I think. And then in the next version of Fedora, there was a bug in Fedora itself that caused a problem, and there I had to use the distro-specific version. I was not able to use the Sun version because I couldn't get the Sun version to work with any version of Java. But the distro-specific version did work with Java. And then in my next version of Fedora, I found a bug right away in the distro-specific version of OpenOffice. So you will usually find me trying to use the Sun distributed version. because I have found bugs. Now, that said, my other motivation for preferring the Sun version is that the Sun version is the latest version. And Sun releases a version, and then after that version is released, and that version is pushed out to the distributions, and then the distributions can make their changes, apply their patches to whatever it is they've done to make it specific to their version, and build it and be off and running. It used to be there were advantages to the distribution versions. For example, they contained the Novell changes when the official Sun version did not. Well, now those changes, I think, are in the official version. So I don't know what other changes the distributions do other than maybe converting it to 64 bits. Now, in an attempt to sort of stave that off, what's been going on is that Sun has been purposely making changes into the official code base so that it will work directly in a 64-bit environment. So even if they are not offering a 64-bit distro themselves, they are making changes so that when, you know, Fedora and Ubuntu and, you know, all those people do a 64-bit build, they don't actually have to change the code, which means that they won't introduce bugs. And if they find a bug in that 64-bit conversion, then that change can be made back in the mainline code. So that will help prevent some of those bugs in the future, and that's a good thing. But I usually try the Sun distribution version first. And the biggest disadvantage to that I found is that I then need to install a few things so that I can use the 32-bit code on my 64-bit distro. Since I use a 64-bit distro, so I can use more RAM.
So you're using Fedora, right?
Yes, I do. I do. A lot of people have said move to Ubuntu, but you know, I've been using Red Hat and Fedora for a long time.
Forever.
Forever. Yeah, somewhere I still have my original box set. I don't remember what the number was. I'd have to go look for it.
That is just not American to be using Red Hat like that.
Well, it would have been American if I had, you know, got into the IPO.
Red Hat 4 in the box set.
Yeah, it was like 4.something, I think. But I don't remember. I just remember it came out. And I went.
I think
hey.
I still have it running on a server somewhere at work.
Do you really?
No.
Oh man.
I do have a couple of Red Hat Advanced Server 2.1s running though, which is damned old in my estimation. But.
Very nice. Usually with the things that I do, we use CentOS at my work. Actually, I was asked if I knew any Linux administrators looking for a job that didn't mind traveling a lot.
Hey, hook me up, but you got to pay me more than I make now. I happen to know a thing about Red Hat and CentOS, too, you know?
Do you? You okay with travel?
Sure.
How about a lot of travel?
As long as it's paid for.
Oh, yeah, it would be.
How much travel?
Probably 70%.
Only 70%?
Like, yep.
I want to get paid a lot of money and never have to see my family. That's the thing.
that's nice.
Well, that's what they make like video chat for, right? Come on.
Yeah, get a little video camera and off you go. Actually, there are a few other caveats that I won't bother to mention live anyway, but yeah, if you're interested, we can talk. But you won't see your family much. I like seeing my family, so I didn't go, hi, me over here.
You just had a daughter this past year, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I have a 9-month-old and I have a 3-year-old.
Congratulations.
Wow. Congratulations. See, now that's why he's saying that he wants to stick around with his family right now. And see, I have a little bit different perspective on it. My daughter is 15 and hates me. For me, it probably would be a better option just to, you know, pop in from video chat every now and then. Hey, how you doing? Here's some money.
Enough of my dad. See you later.
My way. Yeah.
And if it takes you to areas where you earn hazard pay, even better.
Cool. Yep. There's nothing wrong with that. Used to be a firefighter. Hazard pay just means that you get more money. That's all.
Properly done. That's what we hope for.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we hope for.
Enjoy them while they're young because they turn viciously evil in about 5 years.
Oh, you know, my kids are at such a cute age.
They're cute for a while, man. Then it comes back to haunt you.
And then they find, actually, you know, my daughter was saying to me the other day, my 3-year-old, Daddy, I don't have any money. And I'm thinking, you're three.
Wow, she's starting early, huh?
You don't even understand what you do with money.
3 years old, and she's already figured out how to jam her hand in your pocket. Just wait. We're going to have you back on the show in a few years just to catch up with that.
I'll be going, hi, I'm in Cambodia right now.
Yeah, right.
On a fat phone. Saw my family 8 months ago. Actually, my wife's with me. My children haven't noticed we're gone.
That's right. We just send them pizza money.
Yeah, we just set up. We just send pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Sounds about right.
But, you know, you're lucky you have two because they can entertain each other.
Oh,
like,
you know,
like Dan's children. Dan's children love each other. They're such wonderful girls. I have a single child, and that just means that she can direct all of her hatred towards me.
Well, I put in my car. I put the 9-month-old right next to my 3-year-old. So we are driving down the road, and I gave my 3-year-old a lollipop, and I hear the 3-year-old say, Becca, you can't have my lollipop. And we turn around, and she's like holding this lollipop right in front of the 3-year-old or the 9-month-old face. It's like, well, of course she's going to grab it. Oh, my goodness. You are baiting that girl. Oh.
In a few years, that'll turn to, you can't have it, smack.
You know, one of my favorite scenes from Roseanne is you have this little boy and then his sister, and the little boy's touching his sister. So the dad says, you know, don't touch your sister. So then he's holding his finger right next to his sister, and he's saying, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you. And his sister hauls off and hits him. And he goes and complains to his dad, and he says, Dad, I wasn't even touching her. And his dad looks at him and says, well, then I guess it wasn't worth it, was it, son? And, you know, I just see that. I see that coming. Oh, because my one daughter is so literal. So literal. So she'll be doing the, you know, I'm not touching you, and she's going to get smacked. I know it.
And the hair pulling and the scratching.
Yeah. Oh, you mean with each other, not with me. Yeah.
No.
Actually, my daughter thinks I'm a little horse, and so it's really kind of interesting because we'll be somewhere, and then my little 3-year-old will look at me in public, and she'll say, come here, boy. And people look at me like, she's calling you boy? Eat this, boy. Oh, and all the images that draws up. It's like, no, I'm not embarrassed. I know she thinks I'm a horse.
Yeah, but being a parent means by default that you cannot maintain a sense of non-humility anymore.
A sense of propriety.
Yeah, it's all over, you know. You have to be completely humble in the face of everything. There's no such thing as privacy anymore, you know. You can't go to the bathroom with the door closed, all that other stuff, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, one of my favorite scenes from another movie is they show this newlywed, and the guy's trying to get away from his wife. And, you know, right there in the bathroom, you know, he's trying to have his private moment, and she's right there chatting away. It's like, no, the bathroom, my private place.
No, we defined that, like, days after moving in. My wife moved in. I was like, no, the bathroom door stays closed, and you don't bother me.
That's right, and that's my reading material in there.
Exactly.
Oh.
Why am I... Alan says, no, I don't just look at the pictures, I read the comments, too.
I do read the articles, yes.
Oh.
So, Dan, we got a song to play us out with.
Yeah, I got a song.
Oh, can't wait this time.
Dan writes the songs that make the whole world sing.
No, it makes everybody complain.
Cry is more like it, yeah.
Well, the new music I just bought for my wife was with Lenka.
What? Your
Lenka?
What the heck is Lenka?
Lenka, that's a girl band out of, well, she's Australian, but now she's living in L.A. She's been getting a lot of play time on popular TV shows like Ugly Betty, Grey's Anatomy, 90210.
No wonder I haven't heard of her.
Say that.
All those shows you don't watch.
Yeah.
Wait, I thought you were married. Oh, no, wait, that'd be your wife watching them. Never mind.
Exactly. Which is why I don't watch them. That's why we have more than one TV, so I can go in another room.
Yeah, but do you have, like, Myth TV or something?
Oh, I have a TiVo. I love it.
A TiVo?
Mm-hmm.
So I see you're going to be talking about
Myth TV up here.
I have a TiVo. I have a, if you've never heard of them, you must go out and buy one. It's called a Neuros OSD. Wonderful little gizmo. And I've also written some nifty software to snag all of my favorite shows off my TiVo and re-encode them and stuff them on my Linux computer for future marathons, future TV watching marathons.
Very nice. I have I've never
script if you need it.
I've never done that.
Everyone should use that script, Link.
Oh, it's awesome. Got people at work using it now too.
I only just recently got a high def TV. Of course, I didn't have a cable box either, so.
You know, I really want to get a... Pat would be a good one to talk to you about that one. You know, he's in all that stuff. I really would love to get a high-def TV. Unfortunately, like I previously mentioned, I have a 15-year-old. And it's either own one or the other. And I'm kind of have... I have some time invested in the one I have now. So, I'm going to have to hang with that a little longer.
Time to trade for the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. You know, invested in your daughter or the TV?
Yeah. No, invested in my daughter.
Big screen TV this year.
All right, I'm moving into Alan's house then.
Got my eyes set on a 52-inch Samsung. Really nice looking.
Wow, I settled on a 37-inch. So what would fit in my box or in my the opening where the TV went? Wife said, you can buy one, but it has to fit in there.
Oh,
and I said, can I remove the doors? And she said, no.
No, for me, I'm removing the whole entertainment system. It's just a giant junk collector.
Well, everything is, right? Hey, it has a shelf. That'll collect.
Sadly, in my house, everything is a junk collector. But if I get a new TV, that whole entertainment box goes out on the curb. See if our junk people will take it.
You want a Sawzall? Saber saw?
I did that when I moved to my house. When I had my apartment, the couch I had upstairs had two recliners in it, and I decided I wasn't going to move it downstairs in one piece on it. So I was with a tree saw with it in the living room, cutting it up into little pieces because it was a piece of crap. You know, the couch had seen better days, so I wasn't going to move it to my new house. So I was in there with a tree saw, cutting it into pieces so I could throw it in a dumpster.
Oh,
that's rather fun. If you've never destroyed furniture like that, it is rather fun.
You said a tree saw?
Yeah, like the one like you cut down Christmas trees with.
Oh my goodness! See, that's not nearly as much fun as a sawzall that'll cut right through nails and everything else. You know, you just start at one end and work your way through.
Oh no, this worked pretty good. This it actually worked pretty darn good. Yeah, at the time I didn't have a sawzall. I have one now, so when I want to get rid of the couch I currently have, it's going to get that too.
How about the sawzall to cut out tree roots? You just shove the blade in the ground and let her rip. And you can literally cut them while they're in the ground. It's amazing.
Huh, I'll try that.
Cutting things in the ground. I was amazed. I went, oh, I'm getting myself one of those.
I bought mine because when I moved into this house, it had this wooden swing set that was like the swing set of death. Because I don't know how you could have actually swung into it, because if you did, you would have swung into the back porch on it. But when I cut it down on it, the one portion of it had like a giant piece of rebarb on it. I mean, you could have like anchored the side of the house with it, the way they put this thing in. And the rest of it was just wood sitting on the ground on it, and weird people that put this house together and that lived here before me. So I had to use the sawzall because I just couldn't dig this piece of concrete out of the yard. So I just sawzalled it down flat and then filled it back in.
Mm-hmm.
It was easier that way.
Amen. Preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, we got to wrap it up. It's about 10:30, and I gotta get ready for work tomorrow. So I want to thank you, Andy, for coming on. It's been great. I hope that you have sparked some interest in people and they check out your stuff. Appreciate it.
Very good. Well, thanks for having me on. I've enjoyed it immensely. And come on, guys, go check out Open Office if you haven't already. It's a great thing.
Who hasn't? If anybody listening to this show has not already checked out Open Office, man, I don't know.
It's a sad thing.
You know, take the time to learn to use it, you know. Grab one of Solvig's books or grab some of the official documentation. You know, I mean, you can just do so many things. Subscribe to the mailing lists. If you're going to do macro programming, subscribe to Devitt API. Go to one of the forums. They have a couple. You have the community forum and the OOO forum, and all, they're both great places to get questions answered. Just do it. And you gentlemen, have a great evening.
You too.
You too. Thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
Anything last words, gentlemen?
Thanks.
Last words. No, I'm not ready to give up and give my last words yet. So I guess we'll all talk to you next week, or everybody will talk to you next week with the exception of me because my daughter has a concert. I assume Pat will be back next week, though.
So you can, like, dial in while you're...
While I'm at the concert? Sure.
Yeah. You use your work phone, you could just say it was work-related.
Yeah. No problem.
All right, Dan, play us out.
All right, here.
La, 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 la.
Thanks for everybody. To hell with you.
99.
To hell with you all.
Here we go.
Whether you've merely heard of Linux.
Wait. I should probably let you know that tonight we are playing a song called We Rock for New York by Yuzuma from the album Yuzuma, the extended play album, off of PodSafe Audio.
This isn't an extended play one, is it?
No, it's 2 minutes and 31 seconds.
Okay.
Here we go.
Whether you've merely heard of Linux or consider yourself an expert, here's your chance to learn more about it at the Southern California Linux Expo. For 2009, Scale 7X has added two new tracks for developers and beginners. We'll have over 60 speakers who will cover the latest topics in open source software, and the expo floor will have more than 80 booths featuring commercial and non-profit organizations showing their products and software. The Friday special sessions have returned with Docs, the open source conference for healthcare. Women in Open Source will reprise their conference, as will the Open Source Software and Education Conference. The Southern California Linux Expo is February 20th, 21st, and 22nd, 2009, at the Westin LAX Hotel in Los Angeles. For more information or to register for the expo, visit socallinuxexpo.org. Use promo code CAST, C-A-S-T, for 40% off of your registration, and we'll see you at Scale 7X.
Shut up.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. It's over.
Another winner.
another one. I think I got to pick something for next week, man. We're going to risk it, but I'm going to pick something.
You mean you guys weren't over there grooving and digging it? You know?
Oh, I think I'm just going to, like, fire up GarageBand and just put a bunch of beats together. Because it'll
where are you getting this stuff from, Dan? Are you getting it from, like, PodSafe Music or something?
Yeah, PodSafe Audio.
Wow, they need to have a better rating system or something. Like,
I don't think they have a rating system.
Pick one from the doesn't suck category. You know?
Let me see if they do have. I don't think they have a rating system. No.
Whatever happened to Doba? We need to play some.
Oh, I got. Yeah, I'll break out the discs if you want me to.
We gotta break out the Doba again, dude. No one else is playing that. They wouldn't possibly.
Hold on a second.
Was that the one that sent the guy that sent us all those discs?
Yeah.
Hold on.
God.
Wait, let me see.
What was that one song that we used to play? It was so funny.
And Dan has it all digitized already. He's ready to go.
What was it? Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
What did the dude say? What the hell was that one? That was so funny, man.
Oh, what was that?
I think I'd rather listen to Jono screaming than that.
Oh, come on, man.
Was it Dan? No. I thought I had some Doba on here.
Dude, you gotta find that song and play that next week or something. And you know what sucks? I'm not gonna be able to hear it because I'm gonna be at the concert. But
at the Doba concert,
yeah,
we'll call you before.
Crap,
we'll call you before you play it so you can hear it.
I bet you my Doba discs are right up here. Hold on a second. Let me just squeeze over here and take a look in this box and see if my Doba discs are in here.
I can't remember what the dude said in that.
Oh, wait, yeah, here's one of them. But they sent us...
He's got like a packet of CDs.
Just say, he sent us like 10 of them.
Yeah. Let's see. They gotta be in.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. Wouldn't you like to know? To know?
Something like that. That was hysterical, dude.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Here's a disc. Let me fire up this disc and see what's on it. Maybe that's on there. And we'll be in
Wouldn't
luck.
Wouldn't you like to know?
If it is, I will play it for you right now. Oh, my Doba discs aren't in this box. Well, they have to be. No, they don't have to be. They're around here somewhere.
Would you like to know?
Oh, God. They really get complaints then.
Not only should you find it, you should, if you can find it, you should release that in the, take that song out and put it in the, bump it in as MP3, stick it up on the server and put it in the feed so that everybody else can enjoy it tomorrow.
Just put it on the stream and just let the stream go.
Link, you're in luck. There you go.
Alright.
Wait, there's two of them.
Just put that in the stream and just let it repeat until next Wednesday.
Here we go. Here it is.
Wouldn't you like to know?
That's it, man.
I can't hear it over here, thankfully.
All right. This stuff brings back great memories, though. Dan and I listening to this stuff, sitting in his office back in his old house, going, "What the hell is this?"
That's as loud as you're gonna get it. It has to do with how I'm playing in the room.
Okay.
Dude, I'm telling you what, you should rip this thing into MP3 and stick it on the feed, too.
I have the MP3 right now.
Scare the hell out of everybody, right?
I think you should just leave the screen running. Just leave it on the screen.
Wouldn't you like to know?
It's only 2 minutes and 48 seconds, so...
Chef Red says karaoke.
You know, this is like the first one that first one we pulled off of there, and I don't think we ever played another one after it.
Yeah, we played like three or four songs. But this is the one that we all got the biggest charge on.
You can rhyme this one if you
do next time. Wouldn't you like to know?
Would you like to
know?
We should play this as our opening.
Oh, man.
Wouldn't you like to know?
All 2 minutes of it.
Watch how many people we actually get to listen to that particular episode, right?
Is that it?
That's it.
Thankfully.
Wait, here's one. Never listen to this. Chinese pickle. It would fit. Skip ahead and see if there's any. Alright, well, let's play one live one. This is Dope Alive 2003. Do you want the shimmering or wishing well? Or do you want Go Joel? Go Joel for Joel McLaughlin.
There you go. Yeah.
Celebrating your 100th episode.
This is for Joel.
Congratulations.
Wouldn't you like the Joel?
Wouldn't you like the Joel?
Where did they play this live, I wonder?
I know. Somebody's basement, dude. Actually, I think that the story behind this dude is... What, isn't he like some kind of music major or something? And he was doing a lot of this stuff as some sort of weird music project or something?
Maybe.
Something like that. Some sort of music project he had to do or something like that.
This one's 14 minutes long.
Oh, that's like that. Last time I went to go see CGT, they had this band that was on that was like a psychedelic thing. It was just two guys with a ton of effects. On 30 minutes, they played two songs. And people in the audience were like, is this what we're expecting for the next band? I mean, they were so awful. Even I thought they were like, you know, and I will listen to anything at least once. I'm sitting there going, where the hell did they find these two guys? Yeah, it's out of somebody's...
Wouldn't you like to know?
Wouldn't you like to know?
This one we're listening to now is called How to Nuke the Unborn Gay Baby Whales.
Yes, there's a slight influence of acid on that one. Hey guys, I gotta get going. It's getting late.
Yeah, me too.
Sadly, I've got to get up at 4, so. Have a good one, everybody.
All right, you too, man.
We'll talk to you all next week.
All right, take it easy. Okay. Have a happy
good night. Nighty
night.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Wouldn't you like to know? Nighty
wouldn't night. You like to know, Joel's home?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Wouldn't you like to know? No?
Good night.
Would you like to know?
Good night, sweet cheeks.
See you, Dan.
Take it easy. Bow chicka bow wow.
Is that better?
Oh, that's a lot better.
Okay.
You sound great.
Apparently I found the right audio device then. No humming this time?
No, not at all. No, there's probably a hum on my end until I move out of this room.
Nifty even.
Gotta bring over.
Going through my OSSEC logs from work while I'm waiting here.
Are you on call tonight?
No, thankfully.
Hello.
Hello.
Holy crap, when did I plug my laptop in? I don't even remember doing that.
Holy crap.
Holy crap! I'm like, where's this echo coming from?
Oh my goodness.
Oh my god.
So how's everybody this evening?
Turning bad girls overnight, Link.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh no, Alan's got the HIV.
Not that I know of yet.
That's the operative word, yet. Oh, why did Alan die? He didn't have to die. He got the HIV and died.
No, I don't think so. No, I guess there's not really any need for me to be in the admin channel since it's only May.
Well, you can be our designated admin tonight.
Well, I will be in there in a minute. I don't have my stuff set up yet. What time is it? I better call our guest.
Oh my god, it's 20 after. There we go. Preferences. Do not remember what was in last week's show. Another exciting day.
Yay.
That's about what I think, too.
Hey, Andy, how you doing? Stan Washington. Okay. Cool. I'm going to transfer you into our conference room when you're in there, just so you know. We are live right now. We are recording, but the show hasn't started yet, okay? So here we go.
Yay.
Andrew.
Yes, indeed.
Whoa, look at that. What kind of phone are you on?
You mean the brand? It's a Motorola cordless.
Wow. We got to get all our guests to use that phone because we could hear you greatly.
Oh, wow.
Very
excellent.
Well.
Really good for once, yeah.
Have you ever listened to our show before?
I have.
So you know.
No lying now.
Pardon?
No lion now.
Shall I quote some or do some quotes, or do you want to suddenly hear your audio?
I think you listened to the show.
I'll go pull up the last OGG file I downloaded and let her rip. Of course, the whole time my daughter's yelling, "Play Happy Girl," something she likes to hear.
What's Happy Girl?
Oh, well, it's really a song called Barbie Girl by Aqua.
Oh.
But she thinks it's Happy Girl. After I heard all the lyrics, I decided maybe I would stop playing said song for my three-year-old, but she still wants me to play it. So.
Yeah, I know how that
Happy
goes.
Happy Girl sounds suspiciously like a song Dan might play, you know? So.
Well, you know, it's I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie world, and she thinks I'm a happy girl. And when Ken is saying, "Come on, Barbie, let's go party," she's thinking that Ken's saying, "Come on, Barbie, let's go potty." So
now
we're
I know you've listened to the show before.
Yeah, maybe I should put that on in the background. Well, at least if my computer wasn't downloading 72 megabytes worth of updates to Linux.
Only 72 megs, huh?
Yeah, only 72. I'm not sure everything is downloading. I'm seeing Samba and Striggy Libs, STRIGI. Never even heard of it.
I had some downloads for the video card came through today, too.
Let me guess, you run Ubuntu, right?
I think you guys are talking over each other.
That happens a lot here. Oh, don't worry. Once the show starts, I usually shut up. So.
It's the last time you'll hear from Alan.
Someone's got to be the quiet one.
I'm muting you now, Alan. Just.
I'll be muting myself soon, so don't worry about it.
I was just looking at stuff with X Forms and Open Office. Oh my goodness, have you ever used it?
I've heard of X Forms.
You just wave your hands and then you say magic occurs. Yeah, I was recently banging my head against the wall trying to figure out what it was doing. It's like, hey, I see text fields. Why can't I find them? Turns out they're not there. Which is why I thought, maybe I should document that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I am all for people who want to do documentation.
I've certainly done a lot of that. Which, in the end run, has helped me at my job. Now they say, wait, you mean, and you can write, too? Ooh, libpurple. Every now and then, I actually go to look up to see what these things are I'm downloading.
Bum, 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 bum. What do I need to install on this? For my old man, Link.
What, you're making your dad another Linux box?
Yeah.
Get the hell out of here.
You know what I'm going to do this time? You know what I'm going to do this time? This is what I'm going to do, because I'm so sick and tired of going over there and fixing his Windows 2000 systems that yeah. I'm going to give him this box and I'm going to install his damn Windows in a virtual machine. Probably VirtualBox.
But that, sir, is a wonderful idea, because at least then, when he breaks it, you know, you can make a copy of it, get it going for him the way he likes it, make a copy of it, and then when he breaks it, you can just
reinstall the copy.
Flip it over.
That's it. That's it. That's what I'm going to do.
Just install Minesweeper, Tetris, and Solitaire. He won't notice it's Linux.
Yeah. Well, you know what he does? He has a Linux box over there. It's on a really old system, though. But what is that called? It's got to be installed. Gnome. No. Oh, what's that game? Mahjong.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, he's always...
That's a great game. I hate to admit it when...
like that, she does Mahjong too.
Hey, Link, can you turn yourself up a little bit? I can hardly hear you.
How's that?
Freaking pig?
All right, thank
that
you.
That was louder, yeah.
There you go. Now, do I really need to turn myself up, or...
Sort of
mumbling
low.
Before, so...
Well, it could have been just mumbling, yeah. I don't know if I sound louder or not.
No, I can hear you fine.
Mahjong's a dance game.
Can you hear my washing machine in the back?
Alan says, I'm sort of low. Am I sort of low now? Or should I go lower? You're very low now. Lower. Lower.
How low can he go?
That's it, man. It's all over after that.
Ooh, I could update the Renus machine, too. Maybe I should put him on.
You know what always trips my old man up?
Windows.
What's that?
It's on Windows. He uses... He's dead set on using his DVD burner as a packet writing device.
A packet writing device?
Yeah, you can continuously open sessions on a rewritable CD or DVD, and you can almost use it like a quote floppy. And he constantly uses this crap, and then it breaks on him, so he can't use it in Windows anymore. And he's like, why doesn't it ever work? But you could pop it into Linux and still read the CD.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep telling them, don't do that. That's why you have USB flash storage. You don't need to use a CD anymore. If you want to use a CD, burn it and close the session. Stop doing things you're not supposed to be doing, and you won't have these problems.
And, of course, he ignores you.
Yeah, he does. Well, it should work. I installed the software.
He doesn't ignore him. He just thinks that, you know what? My son is wonderful and brilliant, and if I break it, he'll come and fix it for me.
Yeah.
And that's what happens, right? So, who wins? Your dad does.
And that's the way, I like it.
So when are you coming out here to deliver that, Dan?
I don't know, in a couple weeks.
Aha. Uh-huh.
We should all
get together. Yeah, Brother D, NCD.
Yeah, we should all get together, man.
I would love to. The only problem I have is every time I come in, I get in like 2 o'clock in the morning on Friday, and I have to leave before 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday.
We'll leave earlier.
So you can take Friday off, you know. I give you my permission.
Thanks.
That gives you a little extra time.
If you need my permission, you can have it too.
See, there you go.
We'll send you down something written there, so you know you can. The tech show guys
like a permission slip from your parents or something, you know?
Yeah.
Dan Roscoe has my permission to take the day off.
Ah, we're on bin rev.
Yay.
Wow, everything's going so smooth so far. What's going to happen? Is somebody making a backup
recording?
We haven't
been on BinRev in a long time. We haven't been on BinRev in a long time, have we?
No, since
last
Enigma.
Week we were on.
Right? Oh, were we? I was late.
I'll convince my 3-year-old to pick up the phone. Honey, it's Grandma.
Our audience would love to hear a 3-year-old. They're always begging for new content.
All right, I'll go pop a bottle of something nice. Things will degrade over time. He was coherent when he started.
Feel free to drink whatever you would like.
Now that's the kind of guest I like on the show.
Honey, I'm drunk. Let's play with firearms.
Yeah.
Can't do that. No, unless they're filled with water or something. Hmm. That was yummy.
Sounded yummy.
See, I take it in the Powerball, you don't get anything for just one number, huh? That sucks.
Sure you do. Can't you, like, put your ticket in for the drawing at the end of the year or some stupid thing?
Well, I don't know.
You should save them in case you hit it big, and then all the money you spent that you threw away is then a tax write-off.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Called gambling losses as opposed to gambling winnings.
Or you could just thumbtack it to your wall, and when you fill your entire wall up, you can sit back and marvel at how retarded you are.
How much money you actually wasted, yes or no.
That's right. Look at that, honey. There's $1,000 worth of nothing there. Yeah.
Sorry, son.
No,
that's why you can't go to college.
Yeah. No, I'm going. I had these ones that are sitting on my desk for like a year now. And they actually expire soon, so I figured it's time to actually look and see whether actually there was any numbers on them. So far, I don't think we'll be celebrating during the show.
I guess we better get the show rolling.
You mean because it started 4 minutes and 20 seconds ago?
It starts when I say it starts.
God, is that you?
Do you want us to call you
Stop
Andy or Andrew?
Stop touching yourself.
I don't know. I don't care.
Or do you want us to call you Mr. Pitignac?
Your Highness.
Your Highness.
My mother calls me Andrew. Most of my friends call me Andy. And I don't really...
What do your enemies call you? Son of a...
I do that once or twice.
Prominent developer of OpenOffice macros and author. What did you author?
See
if you know.
Well, show starts there.
Save it for the show,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. All right, we'll get this show on the road. Let me pull up the playlist here. All right, here we go. We got a minute, 2 minutes of audio intro.
I mean, when you're dealing with the all-seeing and all-powerful Your Highness King Pitignac, you can only ask so many questions, you know, so...
Yes, I'm sorry.
Save them up. We'll get them on the air.
All right.
Should we hum when we introduce you? You know, like the all-powerful.
Oh God!
Yeah. You know.
Oh, if we had a time, I would have gotten the singing monk I got in the background.
We wonder why his wife came in.
Are you guys ready, or do you want to continue chatting amongst yourselves while our audience waits patiently?
Chatting amongst ourselves?
Yeah. Jibber-jabbering. All right, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.